Greetings, I'm Greg Coleridge, Director of the Northeast Ohio American Friends Service Committee. This is our weekly audio podcast for Thursday, April 24th. We're a day earlier again this week since both Leah Davis, who produces this program, and I will be busy tomorrow. As always, we hope this podcast informs you about issues you feel are important, but not hearing necessarily elsewhere, updates you about past and upcoming AFSC plans and activities, and inspires you to take action. It is, after all, grassroots social movements made up of well-informed, prepared, and motivated people that create real change. This past week was, as always, a busy one concerning activities and events that we were connected to. All of the events, both past and present, you can find posted on our website, which is afsc.org. On Good Friday of last week, I was in Lakewood petitioning for the Move to Amend Citizens Initiative that the Move to Amend affiliate there in Lakewood is circulating. They hope by the second week of May to submit signatures, at least enough to qualify for city council to take up the issue, and hopefully they will choose to put the initiative on the ballot for voter consideration this November. That initiative, of course, calls on our public officials in the Lakewood area at the federal level to introduce a constitutional amendment to declare corporations are not people and money is not speech. Saturday, the Cleveland Move to Amend affiliate had a program featuring Derek DeSell, a recent college graduate at CSU and also happens to be on our board or our committee. He spoke on the corporatization of higher education. Presented and discussed was the college and university influence by corporations on everything related to building and construction, the privatization of research, the takeover of school functions by corporations, such as food service and, in some cases, financial aid and a variety of other elements, and how all of this has impacted tuition and student debt, which itself is another example of corporations and corporatization, namely how corporations make boatloads of cash over providing loans to students. This last point is all the more important given how the gap between student debt, which now stands in excess of $1 trillion, I think it's at least $1.1 trillion, and post-college earnings is dramatically widening. You're seeing just this growing gap between what a college BA or BS educated student will earn versus what they owe, and that gap is widening, setting up a horrific student debt bubble that will inevitably burst probably sooner rather than later. Monday was the monthly orientation of new Akron Time Bank members that was done by Leah Davis in our office, who is the coordinator of the Akron Time Bank. Those interested in the Time Bank have to go through an orientation to explore what services they're willing to offer, what services they need, and how to work the software, since the program for listing offers and for searching for requests is all online. So one needs to go through basically in a small group for an hour or two how that works. Again, if you're interested here in the Akron area and want to become a member of the Time Bank, call our office, 330-928-2301. Wednesday, meaning yesterday, I attended and participated in an interesting what was called legislative theater presentation at Kent State University as part of their annual Democracy Symposium that leads up to the annual May 4th commemoration at Kent State. This type of theater, called forum theater or theater of the oppressed, a type of popular education, was first developed by a Brazilian named Augusto Boal in the early 70s. It shows a human event, and then actors play it out, but then rather than simply end the play where it ends, dealing with a current event, there are opportunities at the sort of temporary ending for audience who are called the spec actors to sort of redo different parts of the play that would be more empowering or lead to a more just and peaceful or democratic end. So we who were in the audience had an opportunity to suggest, and not just suggest, but then to enter into certain sections of the play. So the human event of oppression depicted at the KSU event was on, well, what makes sense, I guess, given students and where students are at the moment, it was student debt. It was a fine program, the arena of which can certainly be duplicated. This form of theater of the oppressed is something that we at AFSC will be looking at as a medium or a mode of doing education and empowerment. So something to think about and watch out for. Wednesday, again yesterday, was also the date of a late afternoon rally and impromptu march at Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland against the syntax, Issue 7 in Cuyahoga County that voters will be deciding in early May. The issue itself would extend the tax on cigarettes and alcohol to fund the Cleveland sports team owners to ostensibly make stadium improvements and other kind of spiffy stuff. Those who are opposed, and AFSC recently came out in opposition to Issue 7, do so on the basis of public dollars should not be going to bail out millionaires and billionaires who basically have not come clean, have not opened their books and made a case for how their finances are, how they're doing, what they plan precisely to do with the funds, whether they even need them. You know, it's ironic, as people listening to this may know, that we have for the past several months been paying close attention and advocating for no cuts in food stamps. You know, recipients of food stamps have to jump through an incredible number of hoops and document what their exact income is, what their assets are, just basically open up their private finances to the government in exchange for a pittance, what amounts to a pittance of support. Here, these stadium team owners in Cleveland, some of whom are literally billionaires, have not commensurately had to do anything remotely similar. So we just have to take them at their word that they're not making all that much money and they desperately need these public dollars. The burden of proof should be on them to show that they need these funds, and the burden of proof needs to be on them to show that there are no other viable alternatives, such as, for example, simply raising a entrance fee or instituting an entrance fee, in fact, or expanding one to the extent one already exists, which it does at Quicken Loans Arena, and how that solution would not be an adequate one in raising the funds necessary for what they're suggesting. So that was anyway yesterday in the afternoon that brought out about 20 people with signs and engaging both commuters passing by as well as stadium attenders to the Indians game. That was last week. Coming up this next week are a variety of events. Today, Thursday, there will be a rally at noon. So those of you listening to this, the event will have already taken place in front of the Wadsworth office of Congressperson Jim Renacci, concerning raising the minimum wage and extending unemployment insurance. Again, while the event will probably be after the fact of when you hear this, you can still reinforce those of us who showed up in person by calling his office today or tomorrow. His Wadsworth local district office, one of his two district's offices anyway, the other is in Parma, but where we will be from noon to about 1:30, in the Wadsworth office, that toll-free number is 1-855-334-0040. I'll give you that number again in a minute, but again, that would be to call his office, let him know that you want him to raise the minimum wage and to extend unemployment insurance. That latter piece of legislation has passed the Senate but is sitting dormant in the House of Representatives. So give Renacci's office a call. He has not come out in support of extending the unemployment insurance benefit program. That number again, 1-855-334-0040. Later today, Thursday, this evening, if you are in Akron and are interested in the Time Bank and want something more informal maybe to find out about it, join us for the first ever bowl off, as in bowling, which will take place this evening, Thursday, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Bill White's Akron Lanes at 2911 East Waterloo Road in Akron. Food will be provided, and the highest score will receive 2 time credits. Cost is $3 a game and $2 for shoe rental, but certainly that should hopefully not prevent those of you who are into bowling and interested in a service exchange program that helps you build community as well as reserve and save your dollars for things that you can't trade services for. That's what the Time Bank is all about, exchanging of services, gaining and earning credits that in turn you can use to spend time credits for things that you need by other members and participants in the program. So this evening, 6 to 8 p.m., Bill White's Akron Lanes. Tomorrow, Friday, I'll be petitioning once more in Lakewood for the Move to Amend Citizen Initiative effort. If you're interested in helping, and a number of other committee members of AFSC, members of our board, and other supporters have helped, please consider doing so yourself. Between now and I think it's May 6th or May 7th is when there will be petitioning, after which they will be turned in. You can contact Trudy. Her number is 216-339-0175. She's one of the instigators and coordinators of the Lakewood Move to Amend campaign, and in particular, the Citizen Initiative effort. Again, her number, that's Trudy, is 216-339-0175. This Saturday, April 26th, former Congresswoman Betty Sutton will be honored at the John T. Looney Peace and Justice Banquet at 6 p.m. at the Grace United Church of Christ, 3285 South Cleveland Maslin Road in Norton. John Looney started AFSC in Northeast Ohio, was certainly one of my mentors, and built up our program, focusing early on as it did on conflict resolution and focusing on alternatives to violence and certainly opposed to particular military weapon systems as well as military wars, including way back in 1970 when he started the program, at that time the Vietnam War, but later on against the B-1 bomber, the Nuclear Weapons Freeze Campaign here in Ohio. He was one of the instigators in starting that, which included beginning a peace group in each one of the 88 counties in Ohio. There were many people who helped, but John was one of the organizers and instigators of that. Known, I guess his nickname was the Ohio Johnny Appleseed for Peace and Justice. The event is sponsored by the Barberton Norton Wadsworth Peace Group, and they will be honoring Betty Sutton for her lifelong commitment to peace and justice. A few tickets do remain, which are $17. If you would like more information, including to make a reservation, call 330-336-7043. That's 330-336-7043. Monday, April 28th, I'll be speaking before the South Euclid City Council on the Move to Amend campaign, both locally and nationally. Council in South Euclid will soon be considering placing a citizen initiative, a Move to Amend one, on their ballot for this November that would call on Congress to enact a constitutional amendment to end corporate personhood and money as speech, which, of course, if that happened, the Citizens United decision passed in 2010, as well as the McCutcheon versus FEC decision passed by the Supreme Court just a few weeks ago would be no more, as well as many, many other provisions that have given corporations never intended constitutional rights meant solely and exclusively for human beings, and would end this notion that money equals speech, which, of course, if money is speech, those who have the most money have the most speech. So that's Monday. And Thursday, a week from today, May 1st, is the next Radio Free Akron Low Power FM meeting, where we're trying to get a people's-oriented, controlled, and defined radio station up and running in the city of Akron. That meeting, open to all, is at 6 p.m. at the Labor's International, 720 Wolf Ledges Parkway. We've had quite a spike in interest following an impressive article, very favorable article, about the Akron Radio Free Akron low power FM station that was featured in the Akron Beacon Journal a week and a half ago. You can read that article on our website or Facebook page if you are interested. So those are upcoming events between now and next Thursday, actually through next Friday, May 2nd. Finally, here are a few news items from this past week that caught our attention and or may deserve your action in one way or another. First, President Obama this week is traveling in Asia. That's, of course, been in the news, visiting four nations, as he is going to be doing over the next several days, and as he has over the last couple. All of them, though, have reservations, which you're probably not hearing, to the ongoing Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, so-called free trade agreement, particularly Japan and, I believe, Malaysia. President Obama will be, as part of his trip, be doing everything he can in his power to convince these nations to drop their objections to the parts of the TPP that would make, for example, medications more expensive, give foreign corporations, including many U.S.-based corporations, more power and more rights, including the ability to usurp or trump nation states and nationally enacted laws, democratically enacted laws, and that would roll back, to the extent they exist at all, financial regulations, to the extent they exist at all. But as we have pointed out many times, the TPP is not really about trade at all, free or fair, but more about increasing corporate governance. And it's doing it by doing what corporations do best, which is escaping relative democratic control at one level of government by running to a higher level, where there are either zero rules or hardly any rules, or the rules, rulemakers can be easily appointed and or manipulated by the corporate crowd. And that certainly is the case with NAFTA, with WTO, with all these bilateral trade agreements, and certainly much more so with this proposed TPP. While more than a century ago, you know, human desperados escaping crimes committed in the U.S. would run south of the border to Mexico, the corporate desperados at that time ran to places like New Jersey and later Delaware, which out-New-Jerseyed New Jersey in terms of giving them corporations the freedom basically to define themselves. Well, now corporations run to whatever international locale and shield themselves beneath whatever international phony treaty they can in their attempt to usurp, relatively speaking, democratically enacted laws. And again, that's what the TPP is all about. So while the president is in Asia this week, putting pressure on Japan and Malaysia to make concessions on the TPP, we know that corporate donors will be in the halls of Congress and in the districts where Congress people reside, putting pressure to support Fast Track, which is, as has been mentioned before, an effort that would allow the president to just present the TPP and force Congress to vote up or down without virtually any hearings and no ability to make amendments. And that's the strategy, to get TPP passed by first getting Congress to pass trade promotion authority, which is a fancy way of saying we need to railroad or ram through Congress, fast track the ability to make a decision about the TPP. Thanks to activism by citizens across the country, including people right here in Northeast Ohio, many of whom are connected to AFSC, the majority of House Democrats have increasingly voiced their opposition to fast track. So if you haven't had a chance to contact your congressperson, please do so. A second news item concerns the proposed Republican budget that was introduced recently by the Republican Party, presented in person by Paul Ryan. A few people have broken down the numbers of the proposed treaty, and if enacted, here's a few of the provisions that the budget would provide. 304,118 millionaires would get an $87,000 tax break. However, middle-class families would pay $2,000 more in taxes, while 4.3 million seniors would pay more for medicine for bringing back the prescription drug donut hole. Meanwhile, 616,000 college students wouldn't receive Pell Grants, and 64,000 domestic violence victims would lose access to the Stop Violence Against Women program. 170,000 children finally would lose access to Head Start. So these are just a few of the what I would say are draconian, very misplaced priorities that are rewarding the millionaires who, of course, why this is happening goes back to something we spoke about last week about how this is, as Princeton and Northwestern professors have documented in a new report, not a democracy, but in fact a growing oligarchy, where the political views increasingly are not being heard in Washington by average ordinary people, but instead by well-to-do people and their special interests of all sorts, but certainly disproportionately those special interests are those representing the very well-to-do people and major corporations. So we need to do what we can to spread the word and communicate with our congresspeople and our senators that the Republican proposed budget is completely unacceptable. And actually, the Democratic budget ain't all that much greater. So we need to focus on creating spending, tax, and monetary priorities that are sustainable, that are financially reasonable, and that meet the human needs of people where they are. Third, a couple of items related to one of our favorite topics, corporate personhood. In fact, one related to a case that was heard before the Supreme Court this week, and a second, something that was in the courts brought by a corporation. The first actually has to do with an Ohio case. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments this past Tuesday testing whether states can make it a crime to lie about candidates during an election campaign. At issue is an Ohio law that imposes potential jail time or a fine for first offense and possibly loss of the right to vote for anyone convicted twice. The case before the court, however, involves not a person, not a human person, but an organization, specifically a 501c4 corporation called the Susan B. Anthony List. Namely, this is not a human person named Susan B. Anthony. This is a corporation called the Susan B. Anthony List that promotes causes mostly against abortion. The salient issue, however, completely ignored by the press, and obviously the U.S. Supreme Court, is how in the world does a bunch of legal documents, namely a corporation, possess inalienable Bill of Rights rights, in this case, First Amendment free speech rights, including the right to lie, because that's what the specific case is about, that this corporation should have the First Amendment right not to speak whatever, but to speak knowing that the speech is a lie. Well, the issue itself is moot because It's not about abortion. It's not about whether Ohio or any other state can make it a crime to lie about candidates during an election campaign. The right to lie, so to speak, should only be an issue when an actual human being is involved. But the Susan B. Anthony List Corporation is not a human person. So it should not be at all. I mean, it's just another example of this, just this crazy and bizarre notion that corporations possess these inalienable rights, Bill of Rights protections, including, in this case, the right to lie, which, of course, seem to have been completely missed by the court, but maybe just as disturbingly completely missed by the media. So it's something that we need to pay attention to, and if you're so inclined, feel free to write a letter to the editor pointing out how this is a case that should be shown for what it is, not relevant at all since it's not involving a human person, but rather a corporation. The other issue that came up related to corporate personhood this past week concerns the General Motors Corporation. They filed a action in the court claiming that the recall of millions of vehicles over faulty ignition switches that caused the death of at least 13 people and liability association with having to fix upwards of like 2.6 million cars and trucks should not be an issue that they have to deal with. Why? Well, because as I wrote about, you can check out the full story on my blog, createrealdemocracy.blogspot.org, called The Corporate Easter Story, that the General Motors Corporation claimed that they died when filing for bankruptcy in 2009 to protect itself financially and legally. Its claimed subsequent rebirth, so to speak, as an entirely new corporate being, they claim shields it from liability. And so, therefore, the claims class action suit against them over deaths and expenses associated with fixing these millions of cars and trucks should not apply to them, since they are a new corporation as opposed to the old GM. And in fact, a spokesperson for the, I guess you could say, resurrected corporation stated, quote, "New GM's recall covenant does not create a basis for the plaintiffs to sue new GM for economic damages relating to a vehicle or part sold by old GM," unquote. So here you have an example of where it's convenient, corporations claiming that they, in fact, when they go into bankruptcy and come out of it, that they are a completely different entity. Unlike you and I, you know, who may have economic problems, well, any human person who files for bankruptcy, they come out, they may still owe certain fines and assets and debts incurred beforehand. So this corporation is trying to align itself with being a completely new entity and different, and therefore should not be liable for and certainly eligible and responsible and accountable for costs and deaths incurred before they went into bankruptcy. Turning now to the economic front, here's a few articles or issues that came out and facts that you may have missed this week. Several what I think are very troubling economic trends. The first concerns a report that has examined data from the 2014 U.S. Census concerning household income. Median U.S. household income in 1989 was $51,682. In 2007, $55,000. In 2012, was $51,017. Now, these figures are not inflation adjusted, so actually, the $51,017 is actually worse than that since it buys even less. So, purchasing power today is far less of the average household than it was in 1989, measured in median household income. That from the 2014 U.S. Census data. Second item, the American middle class is no longer the world's richest. A new report this week, analysis, in fact, from the New York Times, shows that across the world, in analyzing various nations, that after-tax middle-class incomes of the U.S. now are behind Canada, which has overtaken the U.S. The poor in much of Europe, in addition, earn much more than the poor in the United States. So it's not only the middle class, but it's low-income people that, relatively speaking, are falling behind other nations, at least in Western Europe, and concerning and compared to our neighbors up north. Housing, which is oftentimes seen as kind of the economic canary in the mine. If housing is housing starts and housing construction of both old, you know, sales and new construction are increasing, that is often a sign that the economy is doing well and that jobs will be plentiful. And if it's the reverse, then watch out. Well, figures released this week shows that sales of previously owned homes fell in March for a third consecutive month, as rising prices and a lack of inventory discouraged would-be buyers. Meanwhile, housing starts, meaning new construction, in the first quarter, contracted, meaning it was reduced at a 30% annualized pace, which is down 4%, taking into account this time last year as well. So it's, you know, dealing with the weather and all that stuff. Well, we had bad weather last year and the like. We're seeing a decline in both sales of previously owned homes and in new construction. Not a pretty economic picture. Other issues this week has to do with consumer spending. It's not only individuals at the middle level and lower income having difficulty paying for college or universities or buying food, but even the likes of McDonald's. Their latest results released this week confirm that something is very much amiss on the consumer side in general and with them in particular. Their global revenue grew only 1%, including new store launches and acquisitions. In the U.S., it was about the same. This is represents a disturbing pattern where comparable store sales have lagged, and the contraction in the first quarter for McDonald's was actually the worst in more than a decade. That's McDonald's. Meanwhile, Family Dollar, which is hot, you know, we're not talking about high-end merchandise at all, is the latest in the string of retailers to shut stores. They said that they will close 370 underperforming locations this year, as well as shed some of its workforce and lower the price of more than 1,000 basic items. This is Family Dollar. This isn't, you know, higher or middle. This is lower-end merchandise. When places like McDonald's and Family Dollar are having a tough time with people coming through their doors, you know the economy is having a rough time and consumers are being squeezed with income lagging, with prices rising, with debts increasing. This is a troubling and very disturbing time. Another piece, interesting. Bill Bonner, who's the chairman of Bonner and Partners, an investment and research firm, in an article titled "America's Empire and Credit Bubble Are Reaching Their Sell-By Date," made an observation this past week, saying the U.S. empire and its credit bubble will probably come to an end at the same time. Each, he claims, depends on the other. If the United States was not so big and powerful, it could not impose its money as the world's reserve currency, meaning the dollar is accepted the world over as the go-to money to purchase things when nations are buying from one another. They don't use their own currencies. They use sort of this third-party currency, the world currency, the dollar, meaning both countries participating in a transaction has to acquire dollars to buy or to sell to buy anyway, whatever is being transacted. Without its position as the issuer of the world's reserve currency, meaning dollars, the U.S. wouldn't be able to flood the world with its cash, meaning what it's doing now through this quantitative easing program, which is creating billions of dollars every month, now $55 billion every month, more than $4.5 trillion since the economic implosion of 2008. Without the rest of the world's need for dollars, the credit bubble couldn't continue growing. And without the credit growth, there wouldn't be any way to pay the expense of maintaining a worldwide empire. We wouldn't have the dollars to buy all the military stuff that is being done and to pay for the hundreds of military bases and installations, the weapons, pay for the troops, and all the other aspects of our global military empire. We are teetering on an economic cliff that, as Mr. Bonner claims, if we make one more step toward the edge, or switching metaphors, if this bubble grows much larger, it will surely pop. And that will not only mean the dollar is worth less, meaning whatever it is we as a nation import and whatever it is you purchase that's created and produced outside the U.S. will increase and increase substantially. But also, this will signal an end to the U.S. Military empire, which that part of it is not a bad thing in of itself. But it's a fact, this point of this credit bubble related to the dollar, that the Russians and Chinese and other countries are trying to halt the use of the U.S. dollar as fast as they can. They and other countries are doing everything they can to develop alternatives, in fact, to the IMF and the World Bank, and they're figuring out ways to trade amongst themselves using their own currencies, doing an end run around the dollar. And there's no doubt that the use of the dollar is being used less and less to settle international trade, and that's likely to continue. And if and when that reaches some critical mass and nations stop depending on the U.S. dollar, then we're going to see a stunning reversal of fortunes economically in this country at a macro level. Finally, the last news item of the week concerns who is being called Spain's Robin Hood, swindling banks to help fight capitalism. A guy by the name of Enrique Duran is now in hiding and unapologetic after obtaining dozens of loans and handing out the money to social activists. So the Guardian paper in Great Britain reports. They call him the Robin Hood of the banks, a man who took out dozens of loans worth almost €500,000 with no intention of ever paying them back. Instead, Enrique Duran farmed the money out to projects that created and promoted alternatives to capitalism. After 14 months of hiding, Mr. Duran is unapologetic, even though his activities could land him in jail. I'm proud of this action, he said in an interview by Skype from an undisclosed location. The money, he said, had created opportunities. Quote, it generated a movement that allowed us to push forward with the construction of alternatives, and it allowed us to build a powerful network that groups together these initiatives, unquote. Spain is undergoing a horrible economic decline similar to what Greece has faced over the past couple of years, and they have been embarking on massive street actions in opposition to growing austerity measures, but also they've been suggesting and working on all kinds of alternatives that apparently have in part been funded by Mr. Duran. Going on, the final paragraph from the article, from 2006 to 2008, Duran took out 68 commercial and personal loans from 39 banks in Spain. He farmed the money out to social activists, funding speaking tours against capitalism and TV cameras for a media network. Quote, I saw that on one side, these social movements were building alternatives, but they lacked resources and communication capabilities, he said. Unquote. Meanwhile, he said, he goes on, quote, our reliance on perpetual growth was creating a system that created money out of nothing, unquote. Well, that's certainly the case here, as well as by many central banks around the country, where bank corporations are creating money out of nothing as debt that is oftentimes, at least in this country, being funneled into the stock market, which is causing historic rises in the levels, but is divorced from the real reality, since those dollars are not going into lending out to people and to small businesses and creating really the real economy, but rather this whole speculative one that will eventually come to a crashing halt. Well, that's all for this week. Keep up with our activities, contact us with questions, concerns, or a willingness to help out. Check out our website at afsc.org/Akron. Our Facebook page is on Facebook. You can just put Northeast Ohio AFSC or NEOAFSC. And my blog is createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. I may have mistakenly said Blogspot. That was my previous blog address. It's actually createrealdemocracy.wordpress.com. Until next week, onward for justice, peace, and democracy.